Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, I'm Larry Mueller. Happy to have you along today. Here we are, kind of late June. Great time to be a gardener. My garden looks great, to be perfectly honest. I hope yours does as well. And if it does, I hope you'll join in and tell us. And if it doesn't, or maybe you have a question about what's going on in the garden, maybe you've got some variety questions, maybe you've got some pruning questions, join in because Christy Marsden's here to answer your questions. She's UW Extension Horticulture Educator for Rock County, a master's degree in environmental horticulture from the University of California, Davis. And Christy, thank you for coming back and spending time with us.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
I've been looking forward to having you on this week. By the way, Rock County, what are you hearing from people in Rock County right now? Any questions or concerns that are coming up?
We have a lot with emerald ash borer. I'm seeing trees dying really.
A lot.
Yeah, a lot. A lot of death coming. We had somebody get a picture, actually, of some of them coming out of the exit holes. And that's really cool to actually be able to see them leaving the trees. But emerald ash borer is really kind of the primarily what I get in my phone calls. So a lot of that. But otherwise...
Flower garden, the vegetable garden's looking good.
Yeah, they look great. I was walking around the community gardens yesterday, and there's not a lot of disease. Everything's growing really well, which means that weeds are also growing really well. So there's a lot of work to be done, but it looks good. This is my favorite time of year for gardening because everything just looks so lush and green and full of potential, and people aren't tired of weeding yet, or hopefully not yet.
Hopefully not yet, but it's coming.
Yes.
You know what I did when I had a huge vegetable garden? I used to keep all of the leaves from the trees, and I ran over to my parents' place and grabbed their leaves too, and then that went down as mulch between the rows. And
yeah, that's
pretty
a great
much
way,
eliminated yeah. a lot of, and you know, over time that decomposes, and then you've got some more for the garden.
Yeah, that's a great way to mulch. And you can use grass clippings as well, as long as it's not entirely grass clippings. But some of that natural mulch will help keep down those weeds a lot. And it's good to do that before the weeds come, because otherwise you're going to be fighting a losing battle.
Well, now all my vegetables are growing in straw bales, so
yeah.
I have no weed problems.
There you go.
Oh, and we have callers online with questions, and we have some Facebook questions. We've got some emails. Good.
Yeah. 1-800-642-1234,
the number to call. Tom and Wanakee, thanks for calling. Hi.
Good morning, Larry. My question is regarding pruning some variegated dogwood right now. As you have mentioned, the growth has been unbelievable, and I have three plants that are in a garden space, and they're basically drooping over. And I'm just wondering if I can prune now, or should I wait till fall?
In general, it's better to wait till fall and winter to prune woody species, just so then that way you're not taking away some of the growth. If it's becoming a problem, you could, and I don't think you'd hurt it, but in general, fall and winter will be the best.
Okay, that's what I needed to know.
All right, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. We have Pam in Kellogg, Minnesota up next. Hi, Pam.
Good morning. My garden's looking great. I'm growing eggplant for the first time, and it's such a cute little thing. It's about 3 inches tall, and now I have to find some recipes for what to do with it. But I have some little sprouts of Japanese tree, peony tree, or whatever it is. And I was wondering if it would be good to winter those inside. They're only about 3 inches tall, or should I plant them out? And last year I tried that. I only lost one. I presume it was probably a rabbit, but since they're so small, I wondered, would it be better to keep them inside or just plant them out and try to protect them out there?
So they're in pots right now?
Yes.
If you had the space and the time to allow them to get a little bit bigger, so then that way they could better fight against the weather and the possibility of rabbits, then you could definitely overwinter them. But you can also put them in the landscape. If you did them as soon as you could and then give them some really solid root growth, that could work, and then protect them. So either
well,
way, whichever you have space
for. I've tried that before, and they only grow, you know, when they're that small. They're just last year's sprouts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They take so many years until they're big enough to really be outside to a size that you'd normally buy. So
yeah. Well, then maybe overwintering them until they get the size that you'd buy them.
So I'd keep them in a basement and partially dry, or what would I do?
Once you let the leaves come off, then you could definitely do that. Just make sure that the soil doesn't actually dry out completely, because they still are living.
Okay.
So you want to make sure that they can still have moisture.
All right. Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. On our Facebook page, I'll put you on the spot here, at the Larry Mealer Show Facebook page, we've got a photo from John, who wonders, this invasive plant is in my garden. I have a feathery bluish green. It has a feathery bluish green foliage. So it's this stuff. Could be a type of sedum.
Yeah, I don't actually know what that is.
It oozes a milky sap.
Oh.
Like donkey tail. It's very tacky. Well, maybe some folks go on to my Facebook page if you think you might have an answer for us. We'd love to see it, because I can't tell what it is either.
It looks, I like the color of it, but if it's invasive and not doing what he
wants. Well, you can see
wants,
it looks like it's right in the lettuce.
Yeah.
Which you don't want, for sure.
No.
So people, take a look at that. Let me know. And then, oh, gee, Phil King sent a photo. It says something I really liked, 8 inches of June rain, a 20-gallon pot of Calibracula.
Yeah, that looks beautiful. Look,
isn't that gorgeous?
Colors. Yeah.
Wow. Good shot, Phil. Good job. We have, go to my Facebook page, our Facebook page, really. The Facebook page, program page is titled The Larry Mealer Show. And maybe you've got a garden photo you want to post, but also take a look and see if you can identify that weed for us as well. It's over on the left side under posts to the page. We have Judy and Ripon up next. Hi, Judy.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
A couple of years ago, my husband and I bought a heavy-duty shredder for, like, multiple layers of paper, because I get a lot of cardboard boxes because of my business. And so I thought I could shred the cardboard boxes in this big shredder, along with all of our junk mail, because it cross-shreds everything. And I've been putting that in the garden to keep the weeds down in between, just in the flower bed. It looks a little unconventional, but it seems like it's worked and it kept the soil really soft. Is there a problem with any of those inks, do you know of, putting those in? I mean, it's not in with vegetables, but
It used to be a problem back in the old days. The new methods now, I don't think, Christy, that
no.
there are any problems.
No, yeah. The only time I've heard there being a problem with inks is if you're doing vermiposting, so it's a contained environment. But with what you're doing, that should work fine. I like the idea of shredding it. Usually people just put them out flat. But if shredding's working and it's keeping the weeds out, then that's a great use of all your extra cardboard.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks.
I was putting the cardboard.
Yeah, yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was putting the cardboard down flat, like she had said, but then I noticed that I was getting a lot of snakes living underneath the cardboard, and that I did not like.
No, I can understand that.
And slugs would be the other issue when you have cardboard.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this will work better. Thanks, Judy. Appreciate the call. Kim in Partyville. Hello. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, thank you. I have a mountain ash in the front, and a downy woodpecker's been pecking on it.
Hmm.
And then it started weeping a little bit. What I did was get some shrink wrapping, and I wrapped it around the tree. The woodpecker hasn't come back anymore, but it's still pretty wet. And I don't know if the tree is going to die or if I should plug it up with some kind of filler.
You don't want to plug it up.
Yeah, what do you mean by weeping?
It's
sap?
The trunk is wet.
Oh, with sap. Yeah. At this point, yeah, you don't want to plug it up. And I would be kind of afraid that saran wrap would actually trap in the moisture, which could...
I'd take it off.
Yeah, that could create some disease problems with those open wounds.
Okay.
Yeah, unfortunately, there's not a lot that you can do. with the woodpeckers.
And if the woodpecker's gone, that's great. And the tree can heal itself probably better than, I mean, I think the only time we recommend any kind of filling is for certain oak trees, for example, during, you know, the oak wilt season.
Yeah, to prevent particular diseases coming in. But in general, it's a bad practice to plug up
any holes. I thought other bugs would get into the holes, and I don't know.
I'd let the tree heal itself.
Yeah, because otherwise you'll get some disease, and that's really bad.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the shrink wrap, that detoured the woodpecker, though.
Yeah, no, and that was good. That was probably for a temporary fix. That was a great idea, Kim.
Yeah.
But so, now I get rid of it.
Yeah.
All right. I'll leave it alone and keep an eye on it.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And let's see, we've got, who next? Derek in Wanakee. It's your turn. Hi, Derek.
Hello. Thank you for this program. It's always great to listen to you guys.
Thank you.
I have a question about cabbage plants. I have some insects eating them, but I look early in the morning and late at night, and I can't even see what the insects are. I can't actually catch them. I've been trying a powder it's like a semi-natural powder. I think it's got bromide, or starts with a B on B, and I tried that, but it doesn't seem to do anything.
Is it the BT?
Bacillus thuringiensis?
Yeah, I think so.
So the caterpillars are really active on cabbage and kale. I spent a good deal of time yesterday picking some off of a school garden cabbage patch. Looking early in the morning is really helpful. Make sure that you flip over the leaves to look on the back and follow along the ribs. A lot of the caterpillars are going to be the same color of the leaves, so they're really hard to find if they're caterpillars that you're dealing with.
Okay.
They'll be under the leaves.
Yeah, or they'll be in the middle of the plant where the baby leaves are, so they can kind of be a challenge to find. And then if you are using that BT, you really want to make sure that you coat a lot of the leaf, because the caterpillar has to eat it in order for that chemical to work. And so you really have to make sure you get to where the caterpillars are.
Okay.
All right. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And there is, even with BT, I mean, of course, this is cabbage. It's not going to be ready for a long, long time. But there are, you know, if you put something on your plants, there's a waiting period before you could use them.
Yeah, I don't know exactly what it is for BT.
Just need to follow the label directions.
Yeah, always read the labels and follow those.
And Matthew in Libertyville. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you so much for your program. I've got a question about my Dropmore Scarlet Trumpet Honeysuckle. Planted it 2 years ago in the spring, and it's just done great. It got huge. It was fantastic. It was attracting a lot of butterflies and so many hummingbirds. But then this spring, maybe about three and a half weeks ago, the leaves started to turn yellow, and then it was just rapid decline where it just turned yellow all over and started to die on me. And I don't know why. I looked, and it didn't seem like there were any bugs or parasites on it. So I was wondering if you had any information as to why it had such a rapid decline when it was doing so good before.
Plant death is so hard to figure out because so many things could cause problems. There could be a disease or something happening internally that you weren't able to see. Not this last winter, but the winter before was really hard on plants. And then it takes sometimes a while for that to catch up. So there could actually be a lot of different factors about what could have killed it. If you have pictures or if you still have any samples, you can definitely send those into the disease lab and see if maybe they can figure out if it's a particular disease or a virus or something.
All right.
The Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic is the kind of the UW Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic. If you go online to that, I think we actually even have a link on our Facebook page, but Brian Huddleston might be able to figure it out. And usually if they get it for samples, they like if you can send the partly diseased, but then a part of a part that still looks healthy anyway, and always mail, never mail on Friday.
Yeah, and as quick as you can. Yeah, we don't want to have it sitting in a post office.
All right, I've got one more question. I've got some maple saplings growing in my yard, and just the other day I saw that there were these little black beetles, shiny hard shell, about 4 millimeters long on them, kind of eating away in a vein pattern on the leaves, and they, when I approached, they dropped down and scattered, kind of like a Japanese beetle would. So I'm wondering if you have any ideas what they would be and if I should be really worried about these.
Do you want to keep those maple seedlings?
I would rather keep them than just get rid of them.
Okay. If you can catch one of the beetles and take a picture and you can send it into PJ Leash at the insect lab on campus, he'll be able to identify, or your local extension office. I am not an insect person, so I don't know off the top of my head what that could be, but he could give you a better idea of what it is and how to protect your seedlings from it.
I think he's coming up and going to be on the show pretty soon, but Cheyenne is PJ Leash going to be on the show pretty soon? She says she's shaking her head or nodding yes, but I can't remember. Don't remember exactly when, but the easy part, the quick and easy way to do it would be to get a good close-up photo of one of the insects. If you send that photo to PJ, he's going to have an answer pretty quick.
Oh, yeah. He's really good at it.
Yeah, he's
all right, I'll back and tag.
And it's the Insect Diagnostic Lab, UW-Madison.
All right. Thank you so much, and happy gardening.
Ah, to you as well. Thank you so much. Talking, obviously, gardening today, all kinds of gardening with Christy Marsden, UW Extension Horticulture Educator for Rock County. I'm Larry Mueller. Cheyenne Lentz, our on-air producer, for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Join in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. We have Marianne in Fall Creek up next. Hi, Marianne. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I'm a person who is really into hostas, and I have probably around 80. And I would like to try something new, and I don't know if that is a good idea. I would like to take 3 different kind of colored hostas. They should be the same height and planted in one bush. I suppose I could take 4, 2, or 5. But I was wondering if that ever has been done. I like to have a different look, and I just don't want to go out there and buy more and more hostas. So I like to take different hostas and put it in one bush.
But
so it would be different colors. Mm-hmm. Would that be, is that a good idea?
When you mean bush, do you mean like in the same planting?
Yeah, in one planting, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That shouldn't be a problem as long as each of the individual plants has space to grow. Yeah, that shouldn't be a problem at all.
Did you ever see anything like that?
No.
There's a, in my neighborhood, there's a person in the neighborhood. I don't know the person, but I do my little 3-mile jog in the morning, every morning. And this is the hosta yard. And there are hostas of all types, and some of them, I'm trying to think now, that are growing just right next to each other that look very nice, even though they're different colors and different striations.
Yeah, as long as...
So I'd go ahead and try it. Why not?
Well, I will do that. And can I ask just one more quick question?
Sure.
I don't call that often. But, I like to know from the listeners, like in the fall, you have all kinds of vegetables. I like to know how some people keep their vegetables without canning or without pickling. Like what I do, I like Brussels sprouts. And I just leave them out there and let them freeze. And when I need, in the wintertime, I go out there and pick some Brussels sprouts. I mean, people went by my place already and thought, me, this lady must be crazy. The snow is high and I'm out there picking Brussels sprouts. So I'd like to know from other listeners if they have any idea how to keep vegetables fresh without too much work.
All right. That's how do you store or keep them through the winter months?
I mean, potatoes, this is easy, but, some other stuff. Whatever is available, like whatever you have, tomatoes or beans or New ideas. I need some new ideas. Oh, not too much work in the fall.
Yeah, short of freezing, that would be one of the options I would think of. But with your Brussels sprouts and some of those coal crops, you could keep them in a cool place without having to process them too much, and they might last a little longer. And although your neighbors might think you're crazy, those Brussels sprouts are going to be the best tasting Brussels sprouts in the neighborhood if they get that frost on them. So that's not a...
Oh, that's a great idea.
Oh, yeah. I do have done that for the last 20 years, and they're really, really good. But I remember one time I was out there picking Brussels sprouts, and a car went by and just slowed down. They probably thought, what the heck is she doing out there? And I got, well, thanks for taking my call.
Oh, thank you so much for calling. Boy, now you... Marianne, you've got me hungry for Brussels sprouts right now. I want some.
You're going to have to wait a while.
Going to have to wait a while if you want some Brussels sprouts, I think. We have an email question from Lisa in Eau Claire. I keep finding little green worms eating my columbine leaves. I've cut them back down to the ground, put crushed up eggshells at the base of the plant, but can't seem to get rid of those little green worms.
I don't know what particular caterpillar would be eating your columbines. A good idea would be to get the proper identification of what that is, and then you can treat it appropriately. So some caterpillars are true caterpillars of moths and butterflies, and they're susceptible to things like BT. But others, like the sawfly family, they're actually larvae to flies, and so they wouldn't be susceptible to BT in some of those more organic treatments. So it's a good idea to know exactly what it is. And you'd find that out by contacting your local extension office and sending them a picture, or sending a picture to PJ at the insect lab as well.
Yeah, if you go to the insect, again, go back, we'll repeat that again, the UW Insect Diagnostic Lab. You can take a photo, a close-up photo with, you know, a pencil or something in the photo to make for sort of so we know the size, and just shoot it to PJ Leash. He should have an answer. Or drop by your extension office in your county, and the horticulture educator there is probably going to know what it is because he or she has probably already seen it a million times.
Yeah, or do some of that digging around to find out what it is.
All right, Linda in Gresham. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi. A friend of mine gave me some catnip several years ago that I planted out by the edge of my yard because I have cats.
Oh.
And, of course, it has spread.
Yes.
Over.
Yeah, getting rid of catnip.
Mint, the whole mint family, they are very good at growing where they don't, or where you don't want
where
them to grow.
Where you don't want them, yeah.
Have you been trying to pull them up or kind of contain them in that way? Or?
Well, I did for a while, but it's pretty out of control.
Yeah. Short of doing some manual removal, you could try some heftier mulching methods, like if you had a black plastic or some really thick mulching to try to keep it from growing. If you're to remove it, you want to make sure you remove all of the roots. Any little root piece would allow it to regrow. Short of chemicals, it just requires a lot of labor. But if you were to, you know, be at your last need of something to do, you could definitely use a weed killer like Roundup or something to help control that population.
Okay, so it would take Roundup?
Yeah, and Roundup's it's the least toxic of all of the weed killers, so then that one would probably work pretty well. Just make sure that you follow the label directions on the back.
Okay, because we tried Weed and Feed, and that didn't touch it, so.
No, that's not going to work.
Yeah.
There you go. Good luck.
Yeah.
Thanks very much.
Thanks, Linda, for calling. I appreciate your call. Jude and Allison, thank you for calling. Hi.
No, that's like...
Yeah.
Jude, are you there? It sounds like I think we lost, may have lost that person. So let's try, let's go back to our, we've got Facebook questions. We've got some emails. I have email from Vicki here who says.
I'm right here.
Oh, okay. Jude?
Yep, here I am.
Okay. You had a comment for us?
No, I was going to respond to the lady that asked about hostas. I've done that. I put a couple together in the same digging area. And then I had one that grew up with a fern right in the middle of it. And it's just the funkiest thing. There's a fern growing right to with the hosta. And the other question she had was about winter storage. One of the simplest tricks I've ever learned
taking whole tomatoes when they're ripe, rinsing them just lightly, putting them in a bag and throwing them straight in the freezer. No preparation, no messing around. They freeze up like croquet balls.
Yeah.
And then when you use them, you just let them thaw out on a plate, and you can either just slip the skins off easy or use the whole thing for every kind of sauce and everything. They're just terrific.
They can work in chili, too.
Yeah. Yep.
Everything. Yep. So that's all I wanted to say.
Thanks. Thanks a lot for calling. And I should have mentioned that because I think I still have about five of those in my freezer yet from last year.
Yeah, they're so funny when you take them out. They just click and clack like croquet balls.
yeah, they do. Thanks, Jude.
Thanks.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Yeah, that's cool. And Tamara in Oconomowoc. Hi.
Hi.
What is on your mind?
Well, I noticed a spot, some like damage on my peppers and eggplant.
Okay.
And I did a little investigating, and I think it's bacterial leaf spot.
Okay.
Which is something I haven't had with my vegetables before, and I'm wondering, is this something that is going to kill the plants? Is it going to affect the fruits, or is it something that they can bounce back from?
So it definitely depends on the particular disease you're working with. It could get, if it is a leaf spot, sometimes like an early blight leaf spot or a septoria leaf spot, the plant can grow out of, but it really kind of depends on exactly which one it is. A lot of them look really similar to each other, so I definitely recommend sending in a sample to the disease lab to get an idea of exactly what it is. In terms of general management, regardless if you send in a sample or not, remove the leaves and throw them away. Don't put them in your mulch or your compost. Get rid of them so then that way you're not continuing to infect the newer leaves of your plants. The roots will be fine. The fruit will be fine if it keeps growing. So in general, just remove the leaves if you can.
Okay.
All right.
And is it okay if it's on the majority of the leaves, should I be removing the majority of them, or am I going to be?
No, actually, yeah. If it's on the majority of the leaves, that's going to be not great. So, like what I do is I'll remove the most heavily diseased and then try to kind of lighten up the canopy a little bit, because any moisture within the canopy of your plant's going to really increase the possibility that that disease will spread. So, yeah. And you can definitely send it into the lab if you think it might be something, and they can tell you exactly what it is, and that'll give you a better prognosis.
Okay. Well, it's not to the tomatoes yet, fortunately.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I want to make sure it doesn't get there.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thanks so much for calling. And usually you get pretty quick response from
from the
gang over at the disease clinic. So I recommend it. Actually, if you go online to the website, there's actually some directions on how to send the materials if you're going to send something.
Yeah, and they're really curious about blight and how that's moving around. So if you think you have blight of any type, they definitely want to hear from you just so we know when it comes into the state and where it is and how it spreads.
And an email from Lloyd in central Wisconsin, who's been raising tomatoes for 20 years with good success. This year, he's got a half a dozen plants that are stunted. They're curled and deformed leaves on the new growth. The only disease that I found to have these symptoms is tobacco mosaic. Any thoughts it might be, what it might be, and what about a treatment?
So there isn't a treatment for tobacco mosaic virus. Once you get the virus in your plant, then you should remove that plant. So then that way you prevent it from being spread from one plant to another by insects. But there's really not a treatment option for that. That could have been spread by seed. So make sure that whatever seed you're using comes from a clean source. And then if you want verification on that, there is some testing that can be done as well. That's pretty quick. And I'm pretty sure tobacco mosaic virus also has some pretty good signs for looking at the leaves in terms of how it changes color for that. But one of the things with tobacco mosaic virus, it's easily spread through tobacco use. So if you're a smoker, it's always a good idea to wash your hands very thoroughly before you garden so then that you don't spread it.
There we go. Lori in Gladstone, Michigan. Up to you now. Thank you for calling, Lori.
Hi. I live in the southern Upper Peninsula. And I never got around to planting my carrot and beet seeds. And I'm wondering, can I plant them now? Is it still a good time to plant them?
Oh, yeah.
So they should be fine and enough time for them to grow and such?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, carrots and beets are both a spring and a fall crop. So, yeah, you can definitely do it. If you waited a few months and then let them kind of mature in the fall, what I would do is figure out when your last fall date or your last frost date for the fall is, and then kind of count backwards on how many weeks it takes your particular varieties to come up, then you can do that. But yeah, you shouldn't have any problem doing that now.
Okay, that's all I wanted to know. Thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. You can join in too, by the way. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Let's turn to Cindy in Platteville next. Hi, Cindy.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
Yeah, my question, I have two miniature lilac bushes that I did not trim, but they did not bloom this year. What can I do? Can I cut them all the way back?
I'm not so sure about cutting all the way back. The blooming, it could have been stunted maybe if they were really exposed to the wind and the blooms or the buds were damaged from the winter. In general, it is a good idea to thin your lilac bushes. If they get too woody, then they won't bloom. So it could be more of a cultural problem in that capacity, but they're not going to bloom this year for you.
So you might as well, if you wanted to sort of trim them back, I would cut right to the bottom, maybe a third of the biggest ones.
Yeah, and definitely wait till fall to do that. But take no more than a third off.
They're well established. They've probably been 15 years old, and they're a miniature bush.
Have you ever pruned them?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, if you regularly kind of thin them, then that really does help them to bloom better.
Okay, maybe it was just a bad year, and trim in the fall.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks for your help.
Good luck.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. We have David in Beaver Dam up next. Hi, David.
Hi there. I have an issue with poison nettle in my backyard, trying to figure out the best way to remove it. I have pulled it out and tried getting the root system, and it just keeps coming back over and over.
Nettles.
Oh, I thought it was poison metal. I was like, I don't know what this is.
Oh, no, nettles.
So you've been pulling it up and you can't get it removed?
Nope. I've gone through, yanked it out, and it just keeps coming back over and over, and the patch that it's in just keeps getting larger and larger.
Oh, that's no good. Have you tried treating with any chemicals or anything like that?
No, I haven't yet, but that's kind of why I'm calling, to figure out what the best source or what the best thing to use on it would be.
So I'd have to do a little bit of research. I don't have a computer in front of me as to what particular chemicals would be the best for that. But if you do some searching online for UW Extension, the weed, there's a lot of really great weed resources, and they have informational brochures on particular weeds and what different treatments are the best. And they'll have some really good ideas for what chemicals to use for your particular weed problem.
And if you want to treat individual plants, then there's always Roundup.
Yeah.
So that's another consideration.
Yeah, I doubt it'd be resistant to Roundup, and that allows for a spot treatment, which could be pretty effective in this case.
No worries. That sounds good.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And Fran in Prairie du Sac, I think, is next. Hi, Fran.
Hi, how are you?
Great, appreciate your call. What's on your mind?
So I have a backyard garden, and I grow all the typical vegetables. And every year when I plant beans, they grow wonderfully for the first few weeks. They get about a foot high, the vines, and then they start dying from the soil level up. So the leaves turn brown real low, and the stems kind of turn brown and crunch up and stop being able to put liquid up to the rest of the plant, and they die. And I don't understand why. The rest of the plants are fine in the garden. Any ideas?
Are you always planting the beans in the same place?
Nope. I've moved them around, and I've tried different kinds of peas and beans just to see if it's that, and it's always those vine-like plants that behave that same way.
Oh. Is it all the same soil? You said you had raised beds, was it, or...?
It's backyard soil. It's not the best soil in the world. We've added topsoil sometimes, and we've used, like, Miracle-Gro and that sort of thing to try to help, but nothing seems to make much difference.
Yeah, I kind of feel like there's something in your soil, some kind of disease or fungus that's causing that problem. But I don't know what it would be. You could always try growing something in pots to see if that fixes it.
Well, do you have any problems with tomatoes or other?
Nope. Tomatoes grow really well. Carrots grow really well. Potatoes grow really well. So, like, the root vegetables are good. It just seems to be beans or vine plants.
Well, that's a bummer. Yeah.
So, no black walnut tree then nearby.
No.
That's what I was wondering if it was a black
walnut. You know, there is one on our property. It's farther away from the garden, but would it, I mean, I don't know. It's like, I don't know, 50 yards or something away.
That could affect it for sure, but if your tomatoes are fine, usually it affects tomatoes and you'll see kind of a dieback on those crops. But yeah, it would affect it from 50 yards away.
You know, here's the thing. This is the perfect opportunity, I think, to go to the send to the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic.
Yeah.
Because you can get a plant. If you've got a plant that's starting to rot from the bottom up, I just jerk the plant out.
Mm-hmm.
And send the plant, or at least a big portion of the plant, part of the plant that is diseased and part that's not. The other issue could be some sort of insect getting into the stem, but...
Yeah, it sounds like a disease, though, where you have that kind of dieback and kind of it wilting. And if you've been having this happen consistently across your garden, then if it is a disease, the disease lab would definitely be able to help you out.
I would definitely try it. Yeah. If it happens year after year, why not give that a shot? It's the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic, UW-Madison.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I will definitely do that. Thank you very much. Appreciate your help.
Yeah, thanks for calling. And there's a small charge, but worth it.
Oh, yeah.
To find out what the heck's going on.
And it'll give you lots of information on what you can do. So.
Yeah, Brian's really good that way. And... That's another person. I haven't had Brian on the show for a while. I have to get him back.
Dr. Death.
Dr. Death needs to come back on the show. Let's go to Joe in Illinois next. Hi, Joe. Thank you for calling.
Hey, how you guys doing today?
Great. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Well, I got a three-part question. I told you, screw you. First part is I have this weed in my yard that just keeps giving me all sorts of problems. And when I pull the weed out by hand, it has these long root systems that are almost like interconnected with the next weed, if I can get it to come out like that.
Yeah.
You guys have any idea what that is and how I can treat it?
Well, there are a lot of weeds that are like that. What does this one look like?
Oh, you know, it kind of looks like the bottom of a dandelion, but it doesn't have a sharp point. It's kind of like a rounded end on it. It's like a lime green. And it clusters. Like, I have a Bradford pear tree right there, and it seems to cluster there. And I just told my wife the other day that 2 years ago I planted Pachysandra around the base of the tree, and I'm wondering if, like, that weed seed came in with that plant or something, because I never had this type of weed before.
Hmm.
Well, it could have.
Yeah, I don't know what type of weed that would be. Are you looking to remove it? Because I'm sure... if you're removing it, you have to remove all those root parts, and that's probably how it spreads so easily if you're not removing all those root parts.
Right,
it would be,
and that's the issue, because it's underneath the tree, so I can't get, like, tines down in because I don't want to damage the tree roots.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah, so it's kind of a, I don't know.
Well, in that situation, about the only thing you can do is a Roundup.
Yeah, because if you did a spot treatment on the leaves, it wouldn't affect your tree at all. As long as you're not doing a soil soak or anything, if you're getting just the leaves of the plant that you want to get rid of, then that's an effective way to treat it.
Okay. All right, and then the next part of my question is I have rose bushes, and then I got a honeysuckle vine and... bee balm.
Mm-hmm.
And on my rose bushes, I get black spot fungus, and on the bee balm and the honeysuckle vine, I get powdery mildew. And this year, it seemed to pick up quicker because of all the rain we've had in Illinois. So I went to the store and I got neem oil after doing some research. Is that the best treatment for those types of plants and the diseases, or is there something else I should be doing?
I thought neem oil was more for insect treatments. Usually copper is used to prevent the spread of diseases. What you can do from a cultural standpoint if you try to reduce the moisture level within the canopy so then airflow so it can dry up pretty quick, then that'll help. But I'm not quite sure about neem use.
Copper sulfate is...
Yeah, copper is generally what we go to for trying to prevent diseases from spreading.
Copper for the black spot and the powdery mildew both?
Yeah, because they're both diseases and it prevents them from spreading. Now, you'd have to be very particular about the way you treat it to make sure that you treat all your new growth. And then if you remove the old growth that's diseased, that'll help prevent the spread as well.
Okay.
All right. Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Oh, boy, having some fun on Garden Talk today, visiting with Christy Marsden. She's the UW Extension Horticulture Educator for Rock County. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this edition of Garden Talk. We visit with our guest, Christy Marsden, from Rock County, Extension Horticulture Educator there. I'm Larry Mueller. And you can call at 800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. Facebook question from Mary. I have a raised garden, and I planted radishes. They're really tall, but not rounded on the bottom. What can I do to produce radishes? So it sounds like...
That must be some really good soil is what I'm thinking. Because if you have really rich soil, the plant's going to focus more on foliage or leaf growth than it would the vegetative state. I don't think there's a lot you can do. You could try pinching it back, but I think that would just make more leaves. You can just kind of hope that they maybe need a little bit more time to grow some radishes, but...
And thin.
Yeah, thinning for sure. If they're too close together, then they're not going to be focusing on bulbs at all. So at least a couple inches per plant or between each plant.
Yeah, there we go. Betsy in Edgerton, thanks for calling.
Hi, I'm wondering if you can give me some advice on plants that I can put between the sidewalk and the street that will survive winter salt. And I'm obviously looking at perennials, but maybe annuals will have to be the way to go.
Yeah, there's actually, I had someone ask me this question recently, and there's a really fantastic publication that talks about salt and salt damage in the landscape and then goes over a bunch of different plants for that very purpose. Perennials, annuals, vines. And so if you go to our horticulture webpage for UW Extension, which is hort.uwex.edu, that's hort.uwex.edu. We put all our publications and educational information on there. And so if you just did a search for salt, the publication would come up. And that would be really fantastic for you to use because it would kind of talk about
give
all the
whole
plants.
Range.
Yeah. Yeah. So you right. could get lots of great recommendations from that.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And, you know, free too.
Yeah. Another, totally.
Free. Another nice thing.
Mm-hmm.
Ivan in Eau Claire. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Yvonne, you mean?
Oh, Yvonne. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm looking at I-V-A-N, and I should have been looking at probably I-V-O-N-N-E or something close to that.
Okay, I'm Ivan.
All right, well, how can we help you?
I'm using pine needles for mulching, and I feel it's very successful. I'm happy with the results. But neighbors keep telling me they're acidic and going to ruin my plants. I've got perennials, hostas, all kinds of things. I'm using them as a mulch between in my garden as well with vegetables so that weeds don't grow.
Yeah.
Can you comment on pine needles? Are they acidic? Are they going to ruin the soil? Am I doing the right thing?
Then I got to ruin the soil.
No, it depends on how many pine needles you're putting in your soil. If you're doing tons and tons of pine needles, then that could affect it. But it's actually somewhat difficult to change the acidity of your soil. So you should be fine as long as it's not feet and feet of pine needles every year.
It's more like how bad, like 6 inches or less?
Yeah, definitely. And that should be okay. Now, if you've been doing this for a while and you do start to see some issues, you can definitely do a soil test and kind of see if it is the soil and if that's been changing to cause those problems. But you should be okay.
So I'm also lasagna-ing it in that I take and put maple leaves between the layers. I'm trying to build my soil as well.
Yeah, that's a great, I love lasagna gardening and that way of composting because you can get a lot of, use a lot of the things from your garden and put them back into the soil.
Yep, absolutely.
Right. So, in other words, I'm not going to kill everything with
Yvonne, you're fine.
Yeah, you'll be good.
Okay. Thank you very much. Enjoy your program immensely.
Oh, thanks for calling. Appreciate your call. We have lots of callers, as a matter of fact. Here's Steve in Fitchburg. Let's go there. Hi, Steve.
Hi. I've got a decorative in my front yard, a smoke bush I planted about 4 years ago, and it's growing great.
Mm-hmm.
My issue is it's getting taller than I want it to be. I prune the up the top some and trying to stimulate growth down on the lower part of it so it gets real full, and it just, shoots up about another 2 feet, and then it gets all these, the light feathery blooms on the end.
So the best way to prune your plant would be by thinning cuts. If you just chopped off the top, that actually promotes growth from the top upwards. And so with thinning, you kind of follow branches back to the main branch and cut it off at that point. And then that way you're just generally reducing the overall size of your plant, but then you're also making sure not to promote growth just on the top. And you want to make sure you do that in the winter and that you're not cutting off more than a third of your plant because that'll make it grow too much.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Amy in Madison, hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have two apple trees in my yard, and I've just been noticing in like the last week that they're being defoliated, but I can't tell by what. They're losing leaves at the ends of the branches,
mm-hmm.
and whatever is taking the leaves is leaving the petiole behind. So it doesn't seem like it's an animal browsing. It really does look like some kind of insect, but I see nothing on the trees. I see no insects. I see no worms. A little bit of chewing evidence on some of the other leaves, but I cannot account for this leaf loss.
Wow, that's very unusual, especially if they're leaving the petioles.
Yeah.
That's really unusual. I'm not quite sure. It could be a generalist or it could be a particular for apples. I don't, are you seeing any frass or any evidence of caterpillars anywhere below your apple trees or on the branches or anything?
Not really. And the apples are arranged, so I have kind of a tree line, and so I don't have them all next to one another. So there's like a pear tree in mm-hmm. between all of my apple trees. They're the third apple tree that does not seem to be affected. The pear trees are untouched.
Oh.
So it's very selectively going after the apples.
Wow.
Maybe going out early in the morning and trying to see if you can see anything, or don't know if there'd even be any nighttime insects that would do that. That's really unusual to just leave the petiole and eat all the leaves like that.
From a distance, when I first saw it, I thought it might be deer browsing.
Yeah.
Because it was at the right height, and, it was just sort of taking the outside leaves off. But, a deer wouldn't do that. A deer would eat all the way down the branch. So
it's, really but it's just at the tips of the leaves, and it only goes up a certain height?
No, the leaves are gone completely.
All the leaves.
And it could certainly go that way. So it's sort of the middle of the tree. So the mid-height branches, these are pretty young trees, by the way. They're maybe 4 or 5 years old, so they're not, they're maybe 7 or 8 feet tall at this point.
Yeah.
So it's like the mid-level branches, the very top branches don't seem to be affected, but,
I don't know.
If it's at a certain height all the way around.
It's
got to be an animal.
It seems like an animal. Yeah, especially if your pears weren't affected.
Right.
Oh. Maybe you have just some very particular deer.
Or a raccoon.
Yeah, raccoons or something. Yeah, I have chipmunks crawling into my plants just tearing off leaves randomly. So there's a lot of different...
I've certainly seen chipmunks in other trees on my property, but...
If you had a trail cam...
Yeah.
I'd put a trail cam out.
Yeah.
I really would. I mean, if you had one, or you could borrow one from a friend or something.
No, we actually own one. That's an excellent idea.
Yes, you should totally
do that.
I would
definitely put
that
out there.
Because otherwise, I'm totally stumped. I have no idea.
Okay. Well,
good luck.
Thanks. I stumped the experts today. Wow.
Yeah.
But at least we've got a solution for part of the answer is, you know,
trail
get
cam.
That trail cam up there.
Mm-hmm.
That would be that'd be a good way to at least check. So thanks very much for calling. We have an email. Jan put, can I safely cut an 8-foot-high Diablo 9 bark shrub to the ground? It's so thick with branches, it seems overwhelming to selectively cut back the old branches, but I don't want to lose it.
Oh, that's a lot of plant material to remove. That I'd be a little concerned. It might take a couple years to do some heavier cutbacks, but I'm a little concerned about cutting 8 feet of growth down to the ground and hoping that it bounced back. Yeah.
So you want to here again? You're going to go for the biggest.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest branches.
And just slowly over a couple of years, remove no more than a third every year to try to reduce the overall growth.
And you cut them right back to as far back as you can.
Yep.
As you can cut them. And it's going to stimulate some more growth.
Yeah.
But it's not going to be 8 foot high growth.
No, yeah, that's a little
if you're cutting off the 8 footers. If you're cutting off the 8 footers, you're going to be. You're gonna be happy in the end. It's
yes.
a lot of work, but you're gonna be happy in the end.
Because you won't lose your plant.
You're not gonna lose your plant. Christy Marsden, our guest, UW Extension Horticulture Educator. She works out of Rock County, master's degree in environmental horticulture from the University of California, Davis. Our guest for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. So happy to have you along here for this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller. My guest, Christy Marsden, UW Extension Horticulture Educator in Rock County. Wonderful to have her along. And again, thank you so much for listening in. If you have a question, call us, 1-800-642-1234. If you've got a photo, you can post it up on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. Or you can also email us questions at talk@wpr.org. And just looking at Facebook, we had a question or comment. Let's see. I'm going to see who it's from. From Stuart, who says, curious to know what the name of this plant is. A friend calls it poison parsnip. And if you touch it, you get blisters that spread if they burst.
Yeah, that definitely looks like a yellow, or it's a yellow parsnip. I call it wild parsnip. It's an invasive weed, and it does have a compound that if the oils do get exposed to your skin and that gets exposed to the sunlight, it'll cause blistering, kind of painful. I've had it happen to me before, so if you have that weed, you definitely want to avoid it, and it's all over right now, all over the roadsides. It's a pretty prolific weed.
Yeah, and it's too bad. And it looks kind of colorful, and you want to keep your hands off of it.
For sure, yeah.
How do you get rid of it?
So it's a biennial. You can treat it in the fall would be the best time to treat it when it's putting its roots down. If you have a large patch of it, weed whacking is not advised just because then you're exposing your lower legs to those oils. But you can also pull them up in the early spring when you have the rosettes if you use some gloves and are careful in that way.
Kathy in Antioch, Illinois, it's your turn. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a fourth generation Harrison rose. It was my great-grandmother's passed down to me, and she was quite large. And I came home 2 days ago, and my husband took probably 90% of her.
Oh, no.
said she had to go on a diet, left the old growth canopy, and took everything underneath.
Oh, no.
And is she going to go into shock?
Yes.
And what do I do for her?
90%, yeah. You can wait and see and just see what will happen. If the plant goes into shock after removing a lot, it's just going to grow kind of weird and from a lot of different places. But if you're just very kind to it, don't over-fertilize.
No, I wouldn't.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think I'd put
you
any fertilizer.
You don't need to fertilize at all, yeah.
No, not now.
But just try to be kind.
Make sure it's got water.
Yep. Yeah, just kind of see what what happens with it. It might be okay, but that's a lot.
Did he sleep on the couch?
Yeah, Grandma got some good licks on him. He's pretty scratched up.
Yeah.
But, she was 20 years old.
Oh, boy.
She was quite large.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, all you can do is just wait and see and try to keep it healthy.
Yep.
All right. Well, thank you for taking the call. Have a nice day.
Yeah, you too. Appreciate the call. Oh, man, that's a lot.
Yeah.
Kelly in Windsor. Hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Good afternoon.
Hi.
I have a question. I actually just started trying to raise basil inside my house. I live in an apartment building that doesn't have a balcony or anything. Mm-hmm. And the plant is starting to get too big for the pot.
Okay.
And previously I had one, and I transplanted it, and 2 days later it was dead.
Oh.
So I want to know how I should properly transplant it into a larger pot.
So when you go to transplant it, how big is the plant right now?
Right now the pot is about 4 inches across.
Okay.
And there's probably 5 or 6 stalks coming up.
Oh, so it sounds pretty crowded in there. So when you go to transplant it, generally doing it in a way that will not stress the plant will help you out. So making sure it's not too warm, it's not too windy. You can very nicely break up the root ball when you remove it from the old pot and go to put it in the new pot with new soil, and then watering it very well in. That should work. I don't know why it would die right away. So if you're kind and you try to make sure you don't shock the plant too much, then that should generally work pretty well. You don't need to trim back anything and don't remove any of the roots.
Okay. What kind of soil should I use?
Potting soil. Just a basic potting soil. I like the kind that has some slow release fertilizers in it. So then that way you don't have to worry about fertilizing. Potting soil will work best.
All right, wonderful. Thank you very much.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. We have a Facebook question from Gary. I live in Bayfield County, and I have mature rhubarb that has to be moved due to an ongoing home addition. When is the earliest I can safely move it, and how should it be done? How long will it take to recover from a move? Well, rhubarb's pretty easy to move around.
Yeah, but you definitely want to wait until the plant materials died back. So maybe in the late fall or the early spring before it's grown or after it's gotten rid of its leaves. Because if you were to do it now or any time where you have a lot of growth on it, it'd really shock the plant and probably wouldn't be good for it.
But it's really hardy.
Yes.
Most rhubarb is very hardy. So.
Yeah. So if you really have to.
I've done it in the middle of summer.
Have you? And it's been fine? Just water it a lot then, yeah.
Bev in Montello. Hi. Thanks for calling.
Yes. Good afternoon. I just tuned in, so I'm not sure what all you talked about. I have some thornless blackberry plants. They were given to me from Jung's 5 years ago. And I have not had a blossom or a berry yet.
Are they planted in your backyard?
Plant.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're in my backyard, and they get 6-8 feet tall, 4 feet around, beautiful stalks, but not one blossom and not one berry.
Have you been pruning them?
I cut them way back. I've been experimenting. I cut half of them back. Clear down to 10, 12 inches in the fall. The other half I left alone, and they're the same.
The ones that you left alone, they didn't bloom at all?
No.
Okay. Because I'm pretty sure blackberries bloom on the second year of growth, so you don't want to prune them all the way back at the end of every winter. How long have you been trying to grow them? We've had some pretty cold past winters that have affected...
I've had them 5 years.
Oh,
But have you been pruning every year?
Yeah, I have been.
That's the problem.
The first year I left them alone. But
yeah.
Since then, I've been pruning them because they get so big. And, I mean, the main stalks are a good inch in diameter.
Yeah, you shouldn't prune them if you want the growths, but you had mentioned that half of them you didn't prune and they didn't bloom, so I'm not quite sure.
I'd still let that go one more year.
Yeah, yeah. Try not pruning for a couple years and see what happens. I know they'll get really big and wild, but that kind of is how those plants work.
Yeah. Now, someone mentioned if I put aluminum sulfate around them.
The
ground is too sweet.
I would recommend getting a soil test before you do any particular amendments to know what your soil is like, and then you can get good recommendations based on that for how to help your soil.
And you should, when you get the soil test, be sure to mention that this is an area where blackberries are mm-hmm. being grown, because then they need it. That's a very useful thing for the people to have in terms of giving you recommendations then.
Okay.
All right. Thanks and good luck. Should work if you don't prune.
Yeah.
We have Harriet in Madison. Hi, Harriet. Thank you for calling.
Hi. My situation is we have euonymus bushes, about four or five of them, that are 50 years old. Mm. And they're beautiful. And 2 years ago, with the heavy winter snow, we lost a lot of branches. Mm. Anyway, I had an arborist come out, and they tied them up together with some chains, and they're doing really well now.
Mm-hmm.
And they are very, very full again.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if I can thin them out and when to do it.
Thinning them out in the winter and making sure you don't take more than a third out from
in the winter mm-hmm. when the leaves are gone.
Yep. Yeah, that way you can not only see what you're doing, but it's less stressful for the plant.
Okay. Thank you very much. I didn't know that.
Yeah, and about a third, you're saying?
Yep. No more than a third. And then when you're thinning, just make sure that you remove the branches all the way to the base of wherever they come from. So if you leave like a stub that's an inch or two, then you'll have some
You don't want that.
That. Yeah,
you do
want
not
want
to do that, for sure. We have a Facebook question from Randy. He says, I have a vegetable garden next to a row of arborvitae. Do you think that acidic soil will affect the growth of the plants?
With the arborvitae?
Yeah, you're not going to get... No.
I don't think it would. If you have some problems coming up, you might want to test your soil to see what could potentially be an issue if it is too acidic, but I don't think you'd have a problem.
I would doubt it, too.
Yeah.
We have callers coming in, and I'm just reading now. We've got lots of email questions there as well. But let's go to Bill and Racine next. Hi, Bill. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Say, I got a hydrangea.
Mm-hmm.
And let me turn the radio down, okay?
Okay. And what's going on with this hydrangea?
I turn the radio off. See, the hydrangea, I don't know what variety it is, but I haven't been getting many flowers at all or blooms. So what I did last fall, I let all the stalks there. I didn't cut it back at all. So now, of course, it's the spring or the end of spring, and what I noticed is most of the stalks from last year, not too many buds at all. So I think most of the growth is coming from under, well, whatever, new growth coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And my feeling is what I want to do this fall, you know, after everything's done, whatever, I want to cut that thing back about 2 or 3 inches off the ground. Can I do that? And do you think I might get more blooms that way?
Yeah, I believe there's two different types of hydrangeas, and ones that bloom off of old growth and ones that bloom off of new growth. So if you left them and you didn't get very many blooms off the old growth, chances are it's the type that has new growth. So cutting it back shouldn't be a problem.
Mm-hmm.
How much can I leave, though? Like, I mean, do I cut it right to the ground?
You'd want to leave a few inches. You don't want to remove, generally when you're cutting things down, there becomes a point where it's pretty obvious where you should stop just without getting into the crown of the plant. So
about 2 or 3 inches.
Yep.
Okay. Thanks.
Yep. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. And on to Bill in Outagamie County.
Hi,
Bill.
Larry, I'd like to know, I have a 12-year-old mountain ash, and
it's not, it hasn't grown real big. For 12 years old, it should be humongous. It gets flowers, the blossom, but it never gets berries.
Does something eat the berries, maybe? I'm very curious about why it wouldn't do that. I don't know specifically if mountain ash, some plants have male flowers and female flowers, or male plants and female plants, and it might need to be pollinated in order to produce the fruit. But I'm not quite sure if mountain ash is one of those types of trees. That's my first thought. Otherwise, I don't really know. That's very unusual. Usually, blooms are followed by fruit.
Right. I've had mountain ashes other years, quite a while ago, and they grew to a really nice size, and they got loaded with berries. And when we moved to this new spot, it doesn't seem to grow, and it'll get little berries on it. Like right now, it's got berries on it, but there's only a few or maybe a handful get to orange.
Is that a lot of shade? Is it getting a lot of shade?
No, it's in full sun.
Have you gotten a soil test? I'm wondering if maybe there's a nutrient problem in your soil, especially if it hasn't grown very big. Yeah.
It was planted in some pretty decent topsoil, but I never had a test.
Yeah, you might want to get a soil test just to see if there's some nutrient problems that are preventing it from growing in the way that you'd like.
Yeah, and again, tell them you've got a mountain ash in that spot, and they will have recommendations relating to it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
County Extension do that?
Yep, they do.
Mm-hmm.
They do. Okay. Thank you very much. Appreciate your help.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And you can go online and find out, you know, sort of how to take the sample if need be.
Yep.
So, Jeff in Greendale, thank you for calling. Hi.
Yeah, hi. Happy Friday. So I have a lilac bush that was there when I moved in, and it's about 3 foot high by 3 foot wide, so it's smaller, and it's not in a good area. I'd like to move it.
Mm-hmm.
I've got an elderberry bush that kind of is in back of it, and it's growing over it, and I got a bird feeder, and I'd kind of like to move it somewhere else. What are the risks of moving that size of a lilac bush?
Well, the risks would be death of the plant, but I believe you could properly do it if you did it during the right time.
So
you did it in late winter, early spring, before it started to bloom out, but when you can get into the soil. And then the best bet you'll have is the bigger of a root ball you can create around that bush, the less damage you'll be doing to the roots.
Great. So early spring.
Yeah, early spring.
Yep.
Wonderful. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you're not going to get any flowers.
No, yeah, but at least...
For the 1 year.
Yeah, but at least it'd be in a better place.
Yeah, there you go. Matt in Menominee Falls. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you. I have a ton of weeds in the flower bed, and I'm wondering if I use the weed barrier. I know there's the mesh or just plastic or, I don't know, any recommendation that you might have. If I keep pulling, it just seems like it's going to be a never-ending path.
Yeah, weeds can be like that. So I'd recommend doing a pull and getting rid of them all that you can before you place down your weed barrier. And it really depends on what you're willing to deal with. Both can work. The black plastic will tend to heat up the soil a little bit and might be a little more difficult to maneuver, but both work very well, and I've used both.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, 800-642-1234. Email from Vicki. I've raised beds, and tomatoes are doing great, but my red, green, and yellow jalapeno peppers are stunted, and the bottom leaves are turning yellow and falling off.
So tomatoes and peppers are in the same family. So they're both susceptible to Satoria leaf spot or early blight. But the fact that your tomatoes are fine and that it's your peppers that are falling off is a little unusual. If you look at your leaves and it looks like there's some little dead spots or brown spots, I would definitely potentially get send it into the disease lab to try to figure out exactly what's going on. So then that way it doesn't affect your tomatoes or anything. Otherwise, it could be a nutrient problem potentially if that bed it doesn't have as good of, it doesn't have enough nitrogen or something. So maybe a soil test would help with that.
And we have more callers online as well, so we can take some calls. Nancy in Madison, your turn. Hi, Nancy.
We have Bishop's weed and a lot of it, and we cannot kill it. We've covered it. We've done the weed products to get rid of it, and nothing. And it kind of travels under the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything you recommend?
What weed products have you used so far?
Roundup.
Okay. You might have to use a more heavy-duty weed killer than the Roundup. I know that there is a publication on this particular weed with some really great recommendations, and it gives the exact efficacy or the percentage of what will work best about Bishop's weed, because this is, miserable. Once they're in the garden, they tend not
they're
to...
They're miserable.
They tend to create a problem.
I think I planted it on purpose, and I can't believe I did it.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. So I go to the Learning Store?
Yep, you can go to Learning Store and search for Bishop's Weed, and there should be some publications for you there.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, no thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Oh, that's a miserable thing to get rid of.
Yeah, it doesn't go away.
Oh, my word. Josh in Racine has Harry Lauder's walking stick. He had it about 2 years, and all of a sudden it's starting to die off. Most of the leaves turning brown. This, you know, and this guy, after a couple of years, the first sign of anything going wrong, I did have to trim off around 2 branches due to last winter, but other than that, it's been in good shape. It's on the east side of the house, full sun.
I actually don't know what a Harry Lauder's walking stick is. Do you know what that is?
Well, I think it's, isn't it, I mean, literally, is it not a, it's a something that you can turn into a walking stick?
I mean, that's what the name sounds like. Yeah, I'd be, the symptoms, if it's been going well and then it's starting to die off, leaves turning brown, that kind of sounds like a disease. But then again, you could have a wood-boring insect. It could also be environmental. You know, people seem really surprised when they come in and they have tree problems. And the winter that we had that was really hard, and then the drought of 2012, that does affect plants for years. So obviously it wouldn't have been affected by the drought, but the winter. So yeah, try to see if you have any insect holes or insect frass around it. Maybe looking, I don't know.
I'm trying to think. I'll have to look online to see that plant, because I'm not familiar with the plant either, to be perfectly honest.
No, yeah.
So anything here in the last 30 seconds as we're in the right in a nice growing season, everything going pretty well, Christy? Any last word of wisdom here?
With weeds, just getting on them early.
Yeah.
Thinking about weeds, just getting them out early before they can set seeds is going to really help you out. And we'll get dry up in a couple weeks here, and it won't be as hard. So, other than that.
But get after those weeds.
Yes.
I mean, now is a good time. I mean, they're not as bad as they're going to be.
Yeah, and when you get them small, they're much easier to manage. So if you can make sure that you're not going to build up your seed bank, removing them and mulching, it's not too late to mulch. I love mulch. That's going to help keep the moisture in, keep the weeds out. So definitely think about that. And then, just making sure that you are looking early and often for any signs of disease and insects. If you get any caterpillars or bugs when they're small, it's much easier to prevent them from taking over your whole garden.
Thank you so much, Christy. Look forward to another visit from you. Appreciate it very much.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Christy Marsden, UW Extension Horticulture Educator in Rock County. Barb Larson will be stopping by next week on Garden Talk to answer your gardening questions. And on Monday, Stephen Lyons talks about his book, Going Driftless. Thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.